soccer matters.
Quick shot, score! The US with Dempsey!
For Fabregas, who looks for Iniesta, who's onside! Spain score!
Entonces el centro de Madrid.
Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm, DaspitLaw.com. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Glenn Davis.
All right, a quick word here for Danish Inspirations Modern Contemporary Furniture, 2775 Fondren, the best in modern contemporary furniture. At Danish Inspirations, well, you should go there. It should be on your bucket list of modern contemporary furniture shopping. My great friend Jan Christensen, the Great Dane. I hear a lot about Danish soccer from him. You do during his segment. DanishInspirations.com. Wide selection, stressless line. I got his furniture pieces throughout my house. Danish Inspirations, modern contemporary furniture, longtime sponsors of Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5. All right, 713-780-3776 is the number to call in here right now. Dynamo fans, expectations coming into the game on Saturday night at 7:30. We will have it here on ESPN 97.5, pregame show at 7. What are your thoughts, Dynamo, heading in to Austin FC? I can tell you this about Austin FC. They started with a very strong lineup tonight. Obviously, their strongest. Brad Stuver, John Gallagher, Alex Ring playing as a center back. Vasanen, the new center back that replaced Ruben Gabrielsen. Kolmanich, Owen Wolf, Danny Pereira, Emiliano Rigoni, who's yet to score his first goal from Argentina. He's a DP. Sebastian Driussi, Ethan Finley, and Jozy Zardes off-season signing. So they're going for it. It's at the half, and they're going to need a really explosive second half. And by the way, for anybody who wouldn't think that Violette would be into time-wasting tonight, I don't know why you think they would not be doing that in this game. They've gotten a couple of good saves from their goalkeeper. So Austin FC could be coming in here potentially fatigued. And by the way, you would expect Adam Lundqvist, the former Dynamo, to probably get a start because he's not been on the pitch here in the first 45 minutes. All right, let's talk Houston Dynamo. Let's talk Austin FC. Let's talk Major League Soccer. And let's talk to our great friend from Stryker. It is Victor Ariza. Victor, how are you?
Hey, Glenn. Always happy to be on the program.
Yeah, great to have you on tonight, as always. We appreciate it. And full disclosure, Victor's a great friend of mine as well, as being an excellent journalist. Okay, just before we get into Dynamo talk here real quick, and again, we're going to urge people, 713-780-3776, to call in and join the conversation. Your thought on the expanded World Cup?
Call me crazy. I'll give it a shot, right? I think it depends on the quality of what teams we can get in there. I like the four teams to a group. I like that format. I didn't like this whole new format that was proposed for 2026. So I'm a little open to it, but I grew up with 32 teams. I'd like to see it that way, but you know, the real truth is it's probably not going to stay that way. You know, the more the sport gets commercialized and, you know, the more we can kind of find a balance, even, you know, kind of middle of the road, I think, the better. But if we can get more quality sites there from, you know, South America, Europe, Africa, even, I think, there might be a case for it.
48 teams, you'll go 12 groups of four, 104 games up from 64, bigger, more games, and more green cabbage. That's the bottom line. All right, let's talk some Houston Dynamo. We got a Ben Olsen interview coming up a little bit later. We also will have Paul Tenorio from The Athletic on, talking about the Claudio Reyna situation as well. How about some initial thoughts on the first two games from the Dynamo and where you may see them heading into this home game? And look, we know the league is forgiving. You can get off to a bit of a slow start and get things figured out, Victor. But, you know, is there a level of pressure on the Dynamo Saturday?
I think so. At least there should be. You know, I thought, you know, the first two games on the road, that was a little bit of house money, right? Because, you know, if you can win your home games, that's what's really going to give you a better opportunity to make the playoffs. But it's just what we've seen out of the first two games, very similar to what we've seen here in the past. You know, obviously Ben Olsen's, you know, the key difference, the first full year for Hector Herrera. But you just wonder where the creativity is going to come in, right? I think for sure a lot more games will be like the one in Cincinnati, where, you know, Dynamo essentially have a chance to be in it. But my question is, how are they going to do it to get in those games, to win those games? That, to me, is the big question. That they'll have opportunities to pick up points on the road, I think there'll be plenty. But, yeah, I mean, and especially this game against Austin, Houston's rested. Austin's coming on 3 games. They already came in last year, right, and took a good result where they flipped it around, where, you know, Houston, we thought, started great with that, you know, goal of the year candidate from Sebastian Ferreira. And
last year doesn't matter, though. This is a completely different team.
But I'm saying 13 the changes of what Austin can do. It's another year under Drewcy, right? He's more seasoned as well, more complete player. So I just think, you know, all the practice considered, Houston has to win this one. For morale, for the opening game, for the fans, to kind of get 3 points and sort of offset what they've already done in the first two games. Otherwise, I think there'll be a lot of worry starting to begin here, and a lot of questions as to how, you know, if they can truly be successful this season.
Victor Ariza joining us from the Striker. I mean, it's a great opportunity to grab some momentum. And you know, I just felt bad for the Dynamo and their staff, because 2 weeks is a long time to go after having your opening two games on the road. It's kind of a weird situation. And I had mentioned in the earlier segment, you lose a game, you want to get back out there as soon as you can. So Austin FC right now at the half, 0-0 with Violette or Violet of Haiti in the CONCACAF Champions League. They're going to have to put a lot into it in the second half. They're going to need some incredible compounding of passion and emotion and some good fortune as well. The Dynamo will hope to be more polished after the 2-week layoff. They played a Canadian side called York. Thing that worries me is chance creation. Let's start with the attack, chance creation. You only had one shot between Sebas and Thor over 90 minutes against New England in the 3-0 loss. Chance creation is supposed to come in the form of Amin Bassi and Ivan Franco.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of, you know, again, still the question until we see them do it on the field. You know, Franco has been, I think, a little bit more, gotten more minutes, and we've seen some good stuff from him, but I think it's also because we haven't really seen a lot from the other forwards. You know, it's Ferreira versus Ulfarsson, right? Who's going to get the start? I would imagine it's Ferreira, but, I mean, we saw it was the coach's choice in New England, so that's something to ponder. The wide game, you know, could also opt for a change with Corey Baird and maybe give somebody like Quinones a shot. I do think, you know, we're watching Austin has their best lineup tonight. I mean, I'm not saying that stops them from bringing their best lineup here to Houston, but I think, you know, certainly we could see a Austin B team-ish, right? So I think that there's that opportunity for Houston to sort of pounce and really take a stranglehold of this game. And then, you know, don't count out Violet, right? I mean, even they have 3 subs, but it certainly seems like they got luck tonight. We'll see how this game turns out. But, I mean, if Austin ends up being eliminated here, I mean, what does that do for motivation? Does that get them wanting to, you know, pick up a result in MLS? Is it going to drag on a little
bit?
Sure,
hope
embarrassment
so.
Of an MLS side, right, losing to a Haitian side, something that I think even
well, listen, even let's just backtrack, Victor. They got embarrassed in the Dominican Republic, and they took a lot of criticism from people around the country because, you know, with what Seattle,
too, I think in Mexico, what, they were saying, what, you know, where's the advancement from MLS?
Yeah, what Seattle had did last year has raised the bar for everybody, and I think that's a great thing when it comes to pressure. And if you're in the CONCACAF Champions League, you can't be losing to Haitian teams, and they're 45 minutes away from being eliminated. Now, I do want to mention the youth on Austin, and I want to go to this soundbite here of Owen Wolf. This is This is the game-winning goal, Austin beating Real Salt Lake. This is the coach's son, Owen Wolf.
Wolf, he finds the pocket of space further forward, driving centrally, looking for options, goes for goal! And that is what we've seen. One world-class strike already. How about that one from Owen Wolf?
Yeah, so both of their goals come from long range. John Gallagher, Owen Wolf get the two goals. He's got a nice partnership going with Danny Pereira. They're playing with Alex Ring as a center back. And you're right, there's a lot of minutes going to be on a lot of these older guys. Not older guys, but, well, in his case, he's a little bit older. The thing is Austin FC's got to be very careful not to get anybody injured here at this time of the season. I don't think there's any question. All right, width is a problem for the Houston Dynamo. Where are they going to get it, Victor?
I think, again, they have some younger guys that, you know, have younger legs, I think can kind of do, you know, maybe not to the level of what, you know, Borrero did for New England, right? But I think you can get something out of Quiñones, you know, maybe instruct Franco to get, you know, a little bit more on the outside instead of
yeah, but
coming
I see.
In.
So hold up there. Let's talk about those two guys. So Quiñones has got the pace. We all know that. He can fly. I didn't understand why he went in the New England game, and then he didn't stay wide. That was mind-blowing to me. I don't know. He must have just drifted in there on his own. I'm sure that wasn't the instruction. And then Ivan Franco, I don't think, is a penetrator. And I think the Dynamo need a penetrator. I think the best person when it came to bringing width to the Dynamo came from Tate Schmidt, their left back, who most of us didn't even know he was going to be a Dynamo player, and he ultimately got the goal in the first game against Cincinnati. But I think that's still an issue to me because the data's there. The data's there. You had one shot between your two number nines. It's not good enough.
Right. And if Franco Escobar comes back at right back, you know, with these 2 weeks, we'll see, right? But, I mean, if he's able to come back, I mean, you get some help on that side. But I think you're right. I mean, especially where's the creativity going to come from? To me, that's the biggest one. If they can get Bossy and we can, you know, see a little more of him, you know, that could definitely get some more because, I mean, even in their bench, right, Austin has some options. Fagundes, I think, has yet to come into this game tonight, so he's probably going to be one of those guys that's probably going to be fresh. Some ex-Dynamos on this team that might get to play, and you know, especially if it's not a good result, leave a sour taste. Maxi Urruti.
Adam Lundqvist.
Potentially Will Bruin, Adam Lundqvist.
Yeah. So there's a lot of them. What the good news is? Guys like Escobar may be healthy. I really like Franco Escobar. I really like, I know Amin Bassi's technical. He's not a wide penetrator, but he's very sharp and tight. Now he supposedly his fitness is where it should be. I hope he starts, Victor, and make it quick. Your thoughts on who may get a game this Saturday real quick, and then we got to get to break.
I mean, we talked about pretty much those guys. Obviously, you know, the midfield of Herrera and Carrasquilla. To me, this should be we should be saying the Dynamo are going to win this game. The fact that it's such a toss-up kind of tells you all the question marks that are with the roster. But we're going to find out what they're made of this Saturday.
Yeah. Thank you, Victor, very much for coming on tonight. We'll see you down at the stadium. Looking forward to it. I hope Amin Bassi gets a start. I hope Escobar's healthy. That would make it really, really interesting. Thank you, Victor.
Yeah, thanks, Glenn.
All right. Victor Ariza, striker. Song called Sway. As we go to break, just remind you again, this show is brought to you by John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm, our presenting sponsors. John and his firm, personal injury attorneys, committed to working for you 24/7 nights and weekends. By the way, they also present our show in Austin as well, which was last night. If you go to hornfm.com, you can hear the podcast from a more Austin FC angle from last night to get you prepared for the game. If you get in a car, boat, motorcycle, maritime accident, it's nervy, few things are worse than injury, that's when you call the Daspit Law Firm. 713-322-HURT, 713-322-HURT. They're bilingual. DaspitLaw.com. We continue on. Dynamo head coach Ben Olsen is up next.
This is ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Real fun sports. You're listening to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Glenn Davis.
All right, welcome back to Soccer Matters here on ESPN 97.5. As always, presented by John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm. It's DaspitLaw.com. Personal injury attorneys, John and his firm, you give them a call if you get in a car, boat, motorcycle accident, 713-322-HURT, 713-322-HURT. They're bilingual. By the way, a lot of classic matchups this weekend. Tigres and Monterrey Saturday, as well as Saturday, Chivas and Club America. By the way, Chivas is coached by Veljko Panovic, the former Chicago Fireman. And then Sunday, 3 o'clock Central Time, it's Barcelona and Real Madrid. So keep in mind, a lot of big games to go along with the Dynamo opener against Austin FC. Quick moment here for Advantage BMW in Midtown. Now, you seek performance and find luxury at Advantage BMW in Midtown. Advantage BMW in Midtown. Down there, you're going to experience premier service. It'll be tailored specifically to you. Excellence at Advantage BMW Midtown isn't just offered, it's expected. The expert sales team, they're going to find you the perfect new, certified pre-owned or pre-owned vehicle. And the service center, well, they're dedicated to putting your time first. Discover something special. Discover your hometown Advantage at San Jacinto and Gray. Go in there, ask for Justin or Steven, or at AdvantageBMWHouston.com. It's Advantage BMW in Midtown. Ahead of the Dynamo home opener, I caught up with Dynamo head coach Ben Olsen. Well, Ben, just to touch on the excitement around the squad, yourself getting this first home game this Saturday against Austin FC.
Yeah, it's a little late to be, you know, having your first home opener for a typical season. But again, because of the bye week and because of the some of the stadium adjustments that look beautiful, by the way, you know, here we are a month in and we've waited long enough. It's now time to get home and hopefully reward our fans. You know, the players are obviously excited, as well as the staff and the front office, to get into the building and see what we can do against a very good Austin team. One that, you know, I'm understanding as the days go by how much this rivalry means to both teams, and looking forward to for my first run in a Texas derby.
Talking to head coach Ben Olsen. By the way, you can listen to this game on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. All right, you've had a nice 2 weeks here. I would imagine in some ways it was a good thing for you. What, from your perspective, have you accomplished over the 2 weeks?
I mean, it's not ideal. I don't know what good a bye week does the third week into the season, other than it does give us some opportunity to keep working and keep getting better in some areas that we identified over the last couple of weeks. Some of the offensive things that are letting us down, some of the structural issues that we'd like to improve on, some of our defensive structures that we'd also like to brush up on it and make sure we're tougher to score on and make teams earn goals. So those have been kind of some of the concepts that we've been working on over the last 10 days. We had a game, a kind of a closed door match against York, a Canadian team. And that has that kept us sharp and hopefully kept us sharp and kept our rhythm going into this week. So, yeah, you know, again, a lot of work done, but it's always hard on the bye weeks. It's a little bit pulling teeth because there's nothing on the weekend to really stay on that edge. So it's always a little bit of balance of stepping away and exhaling, but also improving.
Ben, I don't want you to give trade secrets away, but, you know, maybe some general thoughts on maybe what you were working on in attack.
Well, I've made it pretty clear in both post games and press conference that, you know, our inability to reward ourselves for turning the ball over or winning the ball against our opponents in really good spots and not only winning it in good spots, taking snapshots of them when we win it, they're disorganized and we're just a pass or two of quality away from getting more looks on the goal. And so that part certainly has been drilled down on over the last 10 days, making sure, as I said before, we're a little cleaner, a little bit more clear on our box defending and making teams earn goals. So if that means we're doing the extra effort, we're doubling down, some of it's structure, some of it depends on the opponents and their trends and specific players. But there are some themes that are creeping in that we need to make sure the players are much more clear on how we go about preventing goals as well. So it's all pretty typical stuff for a new group that's figuring it all out. And, you know, it's both boxes and being better and making the plays that make the difference. Again, you're going to hear that from me and every other coach in this league. And right now we haven't had enough on the offensive end or defensive end to make the plays that earn us points.
Now, as we know tonight, right now in progress, as we're on the air here, Austin FC is playing a game against Violets of Haiti, but you faced a lot of good playmakers in the first two games, Lucho Acosta of Cincinnati, Carlos Hill of New England. Now you get Sebastian Driussi. Is there anything additional to plan for him, or is it very similar to the way you dealt with the other two playmakers?
The first week we played Lucho, we've probably played the first three, first three games, we'll have played the three best playmakers, I think, in the league. So we're certainly have a little practice with it. So that's a good thing. Lucho is probably the best. He can go after you, and his passing and his combining is special. Gil's, a little different than Lucho in that he possesses some of the things that Lucho doesn't have, but he doesn't have the 1v1 ability that Acosta has. And Driussi has it all. Unfortunately, he has everything you want in a playmaker. He can go vertical. He can pass. He can drive by you with the ball. He works fairly hard, when his team's out of possession. So out of the three, he has all the boxes checked, as we say. So with that comes your usual heightened, senses when he's on the ball and real urgency when he's around and has time and space. But again, he's just different. He takes what you give him. You come tight, he'll go around you. You lay off him. His service, his switch of point of attack, his ability to combine in the final third is special. And then he also runs in the box and can score from distance. So again, he's an MVP candidate for a reason. It wasn't a fluke last year watching him this year. He's a serious player, a great player for the league, and obviously a great player for Houston. So, for Austin. Wishful thinking there for a second.
Ben, with the workload they've had, I mean, has that changed the way potentially you approach the game after you see tonight's game?
Maybe we'll have a better idea of what they'll do after tonight's game. It's one of those where they're in rhythm. They're playing a lot of games and they're getting a lot of minutes through all their players. So that can be a benefit to a team. But it also can hinder you in that there's a lot of legs out, a lot of tired legs and some travel for them. So hopefully that's the case and hopefully it's the latter. But we will not prepare any differently because I think that would just be irresponsible. You hope for maybe them being a little bit leggy, but again, sometimes rhythm can make up for that when you're in these stretches. And, we've been off, so hopefully we can hit the ground running. We certainly should have the energy and the physicality to bring to this game. I think because of we're at home, I'm looking forward to seeing what our group can do.
Ben Olsen, head coach of the Houston Dynamo here ahead of Austin FC. By the way, you can listen to the game on ESPN 975. You can also get tickets at HoustonDynamo.com. Ben, how about Brad Smith, Amin Bassi, Franco Escobar? I know some of them had niggling injuries, but has this 2 weeks been good for them fitness-wise, health-wise?
Two out of three, yes. You know, Brad Smith is still several weeks away, and the other two are certainly in the conversation. And yeah, it's nice to start getting some guys back. And then Brad, so we should be good. Brad's got a ways to go.
Ben, listen, as always, thank you very much. We appreciate your time. Best of luck against Austin FC Saturday night.
Okay, well, thanks, buddy.
Great stuff there from Ben Olson. Quick word here before we head to break. Danish Inspirations Modern Contemporary Furniture. You head over to 2775 Pondering for the best in modern contemporary furniture. Danish Inspiration should be on your bucket list of modern contemporary furniture shopping. You go to DanishInspirations.com. You can see the wide selection. You can check out the stress sign there. My house is full of Danish Inspirations Modern Contemporary Furniture. And by the way, the great Dane Jan Christensen, you can meet him if you go into the storeroom. DanishInspirations.com, longtime sponsors of Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5. And a quick reminder, don't forget, get your Soccer Matters hats and t-shirts at LamontBrands.com. Yes,
you're listening to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Glenn Davis.
All right, final segment of the night here on Soccer Matters, ESPN 97.5. As always, a big thank you to John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm. Personal injury attorneys. John and his firm will take your case, car, boat, motorcycle. They'll work for you 24/7 nights and weekends. And of course, we are personally happy that they are presenting sponsors, because John gets Soccer Talk on the air and it allows us to do great interviews like our next one. He is one of the key writers at The Athletic. You've known him a long time. We've had him on the show before. He was a part with Sam Stashkel of the Allocation Disorder podcast. He is Paul Denorio and he joins us now. Paul, thank you very much for coming on.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Glenn.
Been a while, too long. It shouldn't have been this long, but it has been. Our paths have meandered in different directions. All right, so obviously I want to just jump right in and give you a platform to talk a little bit about the whole investigation, the USSF, the whole Claudio Reyna, Daniel Reyna, Gio Reyna, Greg Berhalter issue.
Yeah, you know, obviously we kind of reached sort of the conclusion of it. I don't think we're fully there, but US Soccer's investigation came out yesterday, and we finally got a little bit of closure there. I think first and foremost for Greg Berhalter, the investigation found that he was honest and forthright about the incident involving he and his then girlfriend, now wife, Rosalind, when the two were 18-year-old freshmen at the University of North Carolina. They had a physical altercation. Greg Berhalter, you know, as it said in the report yesterday, they were drinking at a bar. She hit him in the face. He pushed her over and kicked her twice. Not a great story to tell. Not something that that's okay. Certainly, Greg Berhalter has said that multiple times. The investigation showed that he right away admitted to it when the interview began. He didn't know what the investigation was about and said, I need to own this now. The story tracked with what Greg Berhalter and Rosalind Berhalter had said both to investigators and in their statement publicly. And the Berhalters were cooperative in the course of the investigation. The investigation found that Greg Berhalter is that he can be hired, basically, that there is no legal reason not to hire him, that there's no liability for anyone that does hire Greg Berhalter. And out of that news, U.S. Soccer announced that Greg Berhalter remains a candidate to return as the head coach of the U.S. men's national team. So really big news for Greg Berhalter in that way. And I think provides him some closure, a sense of being able to move on and take another job now that the investigation has cleared him to a certain degree. For the Reynas, it's a bit of a different story. I think we see in this investigation that you know, that they brought up this incident, Danielle Reyna, to Ernie Stewart in a phone call, that this was a 31-year-old incident that they had known about for decades, that they that neither of the two Reynas witnessed, and that they brought it up at a time when they were upset about the coverage around their son, Gio Reyna, in the weeks after the World Cup. And they knew that Greg Berhalter's contract was up in 11 days from when that conversation was happening with Ernie Stewart. They also didn't participate in the investigation to the same degree as the Berhalters. Claudio Reyna was never interviewed. Danielle Reyna initially denied having the conversation with Ernie Stewart, then came back and said that she did have that conversation. And then, of course, the investigation went into some more background regarding Claudio Reyna and messages that he had sent for several years about his son Gio, whether it was refereeing during Gio's academy games back when he was the sporting director of NYCFC, whether it was, you know, not flying him business class to the U-17 World Cup, whether it was his role at the World Cup and text messages and meetings that he was having with Ernie Stewart and Brian McBride, just didn't paint the Reynas in a great light. And I think also shed some light on the fact that this was an issue that extended well beyond him not being in the starting lineup for Wales, that this had been an issue that dated back many, many years and across different coaches as well.
Do you think people, and we're talking to Paul Tenorio of The Athletic, do you think people have a hard time separating their feelings about Greg Berhalter as a coach and this whole issue with the Reynas? Because I think the two really become nebulous at some point, and they're two very separate issues to me.
Yeah, I do think I think the reality is that what happened here, all of this that occurred after the World Cup around Gio Reyna, and really we can even remove the incident involving Gio at the World Cup where he wasn't putting in effort because he was upset that he wasn't in the starting lineup. He was nearly sent home. And the fact that Greg Berhalter spoke about it in a leadership conference, he didn't mention which player it was. It was supposed to be an off-the-record leadership conference. The comments were published despite that. Like that, even that incident is separate from everything that's happened since with Claudio Reyna and Danielle Reyna and an incident, you know, between Greg and his wife 31 years ago. In reality, I think that the Reynas have to some degree accomplished what they were hoping to accomplish or what they seem to be hoping to accomplish. And that I think it's going to be very difficult for Greg Berhalter to return as the coach of the men's national team because of all of this.
And Tenorio. Oh, sorry. Continue.
You know, the question is, do you think that's fair? And the, you know, I think the question is also like, do you believe that he deserved to come back purely based on soccer results? And there is a large, I don't want to say large, there's a vocal group of fans that does not believe he should be back based on the soccer results. Mm-hmm. And they're willing to say, regardless of this other stuff, he shouldn't be back. I do think there's a group of people who believe that if it was purely based on soccer, Greg Berhalter should be back, but that everything that's happened since prevents him from returning. And that, I think, is the toughest part, is that I don't think you can truly, truly separate the results from everything else.
Paul Tenorio, The Athletic, tremendous writer, still doing it after all these years. All right, Paul Tenorio, the writer, put that aside. Paul Tenorio, now, just as someone looking at this situation away from hard news, did it make your skin crawl to read some of this? Because it did me.
I was surprised. I think it's any time. I mean, the way I put this when I was first learning about it, and I, you know, I wrote about the along with Sam Stasekol, that Gio Reyna was not trying at the World Cup and kind of what happened there. And I knew in that course of that reporting, some of these stories about the Reynas, you know, and their reaction to it as well of Gio's role. And I think what was surprising to me is that this is a story. These are the things you hear about happening on youth fields with youth directors. I mean, I have friends who I played with growing up who are directors of coaching DOCs at clubs back home in Virginia, you know, technical directors at clubs who tell me these stories of dealing with parents and the emails they get and all that sort of stuff. And you think that at some point that would end, like, you know, somewhere along the chain of success, at some point, those emails cease to exist because the interactions between the coaches and the sporting directors and the families change. And that, to me, was the most surprising part, that this was happening at a World Cup with a World Cup team, that a parent would feel empowered to do this kind of stuff because their 20-year-old son wasn't starting.
Could I say entitled or privileged? I think that's those are two fair words to put in.
It's just surprising in that way. I mean, there are a lot of people. There were other people on that team that wanted to start. You know, Brendan Aaronson probably felt like he had a pretty good claim to be starting.
Yep. Great point.
You know, I'm sure we could go down the list of other guys on that roster that felt like, I mean, you can pull examples like Ricardo Pepi not making the World Cup roster. You can pull Walker Zimmerman getting benched for the Iran game. You can pull so many different incidents and examples of guys having to take roles that they weren't happy with. And let's also point out that, you know, Greg Berhalter, his decision to start Christian Pulisic and Tim Weah in that game against Wales, it actually worked. Tim Weah scored the goal. Christian Pulisic assisted it. So it wasn't like he got that call wrong either.
I agree with you on that, because I think people have not looked at the nuances, the differences between Gio Reyna and Tim Weah. Gio Reyna is an inverted type winger, comes inside, may not do the work when the ball's lost in a pressing system, doesn't provide really as big a vertical threat. And I don't think people have thought about this at times a little bit more, you know, a little bit more common sense, maybe from the tactical point. And look, after all, nobody has to agree with the coach, but he is the coach. He's there to make these decisions. Just because you don't like it doesn't matter. And I guess why I was appalled was that this was going on during a World Cup. Complete disdain for an entire team. One bad apple, as we all know, during the course of a short tournament that can determine a lot for this country and its soccer, represented by a lot of people who love the game, support the game as fans now, who grew up in the American system. I just found that stunning, really, and incredibly selfish.
Yeah, and I think I do think it's worth noting that in the course of my reporting, when I learned about this incident, you know, eventually they addressed it with Gio. He stood up in front of the team. He apologized. The team, you know, said some things back to him. And from that point forward, I was basically told like the issue was quashed within the group. You know, Gio's behavior improved and the team was very focused on the task at hand. And you can see that if you go back and look, you know, Gio Reyna played in the second game. He played 7 minutes against England. This isn't like he was punished for the rest of the World Cup. He played in the next game. He didn't play against Iran. We can go into soccer reasons for that. And then he played 45 minutes plus against Holland in the knockout round. And, you know, and so I do think that, you know, there is going to be, I don't condone what Gio Reyna did, but, you know, he faced the consequences. He took the responsibility in the camp. That camp is over. At some point, he needs to get reintegrated into the squad. And maybe he has to earn back the trust of his teammates. Maybe he has some things that he's going to have to do within that group. I don't know. But he's 20 years old. He made a mistake. And that can be resolved. Everything else, I think that the hard part now is also separating Gio's actions at the World Cup from his parents' actions about Gio's role at the World Cup. Those are also two separate issues. And I do think that when we speak about Gio Reyna going forward, we have to, it's fair to criticize the way he handled his role at the World Cup. It's fair to criticize that. But let's, I think we need to make sure that we focus the criticism on what Gio did and not hold Gio responsible for what his parents did. And that's, you know, I think something Anthony Hudson told me in a one-on-one interview, that's how he was looking at it. And I think that's how the next manager of the national team will look at it as well. But, you know, that all that being said, I do think Gio, you know, has some work to do as he comes back to just kind of prove himself again and to prove he's willing to be a good teammate and willing to work hard for the team.
Yeah, he's going to have to mature, but I don't think any coach worth their salt with a talent like that is going to hold the behavior of his parents against him. I don't think so. You know, yeah, I think his future is still bright, but I agree with you. I think he does have a lot of proving to do to people, and you do that by your behavior and your buy-in and your play. It's pretty simple. We're talking to Paul Tenorio, The Athletic. All right, Paul, you know, we're going to move on now. I'm glad for this one to eventually kind of fade away. I don't know about you, but you did great reporting on it. You and The Athletic. Leo Messi to Major League Soccer. We've heard Don Garber and everything. I can't let you go without getting some thoughts on that.
Yeah, I mean, I think it sounds certainly like MLS is trying to make it happen to the best of their ability. Don Garber acknowledging the fact that it's going to take a special kind of contract, I think, is significant in that it shows that MLS is trying to make this happen. You know, likely would it take something like a percentage stake in a team? Yes. I think realistically, when you look at what he's making now at PSG, what he's made historically across his career, the fact that he's the greatest player of all time, in my opinion, it was always going to take a special deal. I don't know that it will happen, but I think certainly MLS is willing to do whatever it takes. And that's a good sign. He would be the biggest signing in the history of the league. I think even surpassing Beckham. Again, he is the greatest player of all time. But, you know, we also have to acknowledge that Leo Messi just won a World Cup, and I don't know that he's going to want to come to MLS at this point. And if he does, I don't know that there's a number that makes it not worth it, honestly.
Talking to Paul Tenorio of The Athletic, I want to move on to expansion in Major League Soccer. What point do you think it ends? Tell us what Don Garber said, and, you know, how far do you personally think it should go?
Well, I think once you get to 32 teams, you put yourself in a pretty tough place where you have to start talking about changing the setup, where single table competition becomes a little bit more difficult. And so for me, I think 32 is probably the top of what you can do because of that reason. This is a huge country. So I don't have as much of a problem with MLS being at 30 or 32 teams. The spread of this country versus the European countries and other leagues, you know, it's not an apple for apple comparison. But again, when we talk about how competition would change, I mean, if you go to 32 teams, you have to start talking about conferences and divisions, and, you know, it starts to get structured a bit more like the American sports and not as much like global soccer. So I think that for me would be the limit. Certainly also, and I wrote about this, you know, MLS could help itself. Sure, you know, Nashville, St. Louis, those markets have been good for MLS. And maybe Phoenix or Detroit or Sacramento or San Diego will be stories like that as well. But the next phase of growth for MLS has to be to find a way to tap better into the big markets where it hasn't truly resonated. And if they can solve Boston, Chicago, Houston, Dallas, and turn those markets into key markets for the league, that will be way more significant than anything that expansion can do. And I think that's going to be the place. It should be the place where MLS focuses the bulk of its attention rather than on going to, you know, rather than 31 and 32 or looking beyond that. It's how do we make our league more relevant in these big markets?
Yeah. Fixing markets that are lagging way behind. And look, we've lived it down here. It's one thing to say it. It's another to execute it. How and why does that happen? And
every market is different.
How can that happen?
Yeah, I mean, every market is different. I was just having a conversation with somebody in the league about this. I think, you know, it's a more quote-unquote simple solution in Boston or Chicago than it is in Houston. I think if you put a stadium in downtown Boston and you make it a 25,000-seat stadium, you're going to have 25,000 people in those seats because the stadium's going to make it feel new. And I think there is something about being new and exciting and cool that helps these expansion teams. Same for Chicago. If the Bears go to Arlington Heights and the Chicago Fire change the way Soldier Field looks and bring it down to a 40,000 seat stadium and make it look like, a soccer stadium, and it's a new, and it feels new and different, people will come to check out the stadium. And then at that point, you can hook them with the soccer. It's a little bit of a different equation with Houston. You have a downtown stadium already. So what can you do to connect with the community? Part of it is winning. I think we saw that Houston can be a good market when you have an MLS Cup winning side. We saw what those crowds look like. So part of it does come down to straight up to the soccer side, but I think it is more complicated than that. And I don't know, I don't have, if I had the answer to how to make Houston or Dallas resonate more, I'd be baking, you know, whatever BCG and McKinsey and those consultants make from MLS more than I'm making at The Athletic.
I guess what I'm kind of getting at is there's no blueprint that can come from Major League Soccer's offices that are going to help the Houston market. It's going to come from ownership. It's going to come from the leadership of the club. It's going to come locally, tapping into local resources. That's what can change it. And I hope that's going to happen in the future because I'm pulling for that.
Yeah, no doubt. Investment matters in the local markets. And I think that's why, as I reported, MLS changed their revenue share model is to reward the teams who have been putting the money in to try to get those butts in seats, and saying to the teams who have struggled with attendance, hey, if you want a bigger cut of this revenue, you've got to put butts in your seats too. And I think that was an important change.
That's a good push. That's a good, healthy pressure. We'll see. You're not going to wave a magic wand down here. I think it can happen, and it's pretty easy to identify the way it, it can happen. All right, last one before I let you go. We got three big games this weekend: Barcelona, Real Madrid, Club America, Chivas, Monterrey, Tigres. If Paul Tenorio picks one to watch, which one is it?
Oh man, that's a great question. You know, I think I'm going to tune into Barcelona, Real Madrid. You know, it's not what it was. Obviously, yep. The teams have been in different places, but Barcelona is building something up again. I'm intrigued. I like to see Barcelona back where they should be. I like to see them playing good soccer. They've got young, exciting players on that team, and so I'm gonna tune in to see how those players continue to handle these bigger stages and see how that growth process, shows itself in what was and I think will always be, you know, one of the most important rivalries in the sport.
Ter Stegen and that team, 19 shutouts, a very defensive Barcelona. And by the way, I will not tell Veljko Panovic that you weren't picking the Chivas Club America game, because I know you've probably interviewed him a bunch. Paul, thank you so much for coming on. Great insight. Always appreciate it. Great to catch up again. And thanks for finishing our show off tonight in big style.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
All right, that's Paul Tenorio, The Athletic. You follow him at Paul Tenorio. Sam Skaishko and him had that great podcast, The Allocation Disorder. Big thanks to Paul. That wraps it up tonight. Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5 is always presented by John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm. Podcast of this show at ESPN975.com. That's where you can hear the show after the fact. And until next Tuesday night, I'm Glenn Davis. Remember, soccer matters.
ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Real fun sports.